Hey, welcome back to the Motivational Intelligence Podcast, where we talk to some of the world's most accomplished people about how they motivate themselves and how they motivate others. I'm Sean Johnson, and this is a three-part series on the virus that has the world standing still right now, COVID-19. So in this three-part series, we're talking to the top brass at TuLogical about the lessons they've learned over the years and the leaders they've observed in turbulent times, from Black Monday to 9/11 to the financial crisis of 2008 and a whole bunch more. So this episode is my conversation with Dave Naylor, and we cover the four keys to surviving and thriving during these times. But before we dive in, I have a public service announcement. So as a result of all the challenges popping up from COVID-19, TuLogical is doing something unique. With podcasts now more popular than ever, and a lot of workforces are now suddenly remote, we think it might be a good idea for companies to have their own internal podcast. It might be one of the best things you can do for yourself and your people and your organization right now to keep everybody on the same page. So what we're doing is we're offering to produce a free internal podcast for up to 5 organizations. So this will be a private podcast available exclusively to your employees. It'll be co-branded with your company, produced by our top trainers, and it'll be completely customized to your organization. So it might include things like interviews with top performers, strategy talks with executives, stories from the front lines, tips, best practices, those kinds of things, and a whole bunch more. So in case you need some help selling this internally, TuLogical was actually just named one of the top 20 leadership training companies in the world by Training Industry. And we can only do this for 5 organizations, and once the slots are filled, they're filled. So if you're interested, get your name in early, fill out an application at TuLogical.com. Until next time, please enjoy.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the award-winning team at TuLogical, the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence and one of 2020's top 20 leadership training companies in the world, as recognized by Training Industry. As a result of the challenges popping up from COVID-19, TuLogical is doing something unique for a limited time. With podcasts more popular than ever and a suddenly remote workforce, having your own internal podcast might be one of the best things you can do for your people and your organization right now. We're offering to produce a free internal podcast for you, no strings attached. This will be a private podcast available exclusively to your employees, co-branded with your company, produced by our top trainers, and completely customized to your organization. We can only do this for 5 organizations, and once the slots are filled, they're filled. So if you're interested, get your name in early and fill out an application at TuLogical.com.
All right, we're back with another episode, Quarantine Edition. Dave, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Sean. Safely ensconced here in my home office.
I know. I haven't seen your face in a while. It's weird.
I know it. Yeah. Well, I'm in a COVID-free environment right now, so I feel very safe and warm, you know?
That's good. That's very good. Well, I wanted to touch base and figured, you know, particularly right now, there's so much chaos and change going on that I feel like it would be good to kind of pick your brain a little bit on everything going on. I mean, you've kind of been around, you've traveled around the world for decades, and you've seen a lot of different forms of crises on a global scale and you know, industry specific, small companies, large companies. And so I figured that it would be good to kind of talk about what are some of the best practices that you see great leaders embrace during turbulent times like these.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. I was chatting with somebody yesterday, and so I entered into the business world in the latter part of the 1980s, and so I saw a financial meltdown in the 80s. I saw the first Gulf War in the early 90s. I saw the dot-com bubble burst. I saw, you know, terrorist attacks on 9/11. I saw the real estate bubble burst. I saw the financial crisis, you know, I've been through a few of these now, you know, so you do learn some lessons.
Yeah, you're a seasoned vet.
Yeah, never in my life did I ever think I would be, but this one is unique though. I have to say, the you know, the kind of complete shutdown. Usually it's more industry specific, or, you know, they're largely the semblance of how you live your life doesn't change, even though, you know, there's something going on that's influencing the collective mindset of the community. But this is the first time that, you know, I've been through anything where, you know, there's just literally like a light switch that gets flipped off for many of us in business. And you're in a holding pattern, or even if you're not in a holding pattern, substantially the way you do business is dramatically affected.
It's been crazy.
Yeah. I was actually on the phone, in the end of last week with a gentleman who I met probably a couple of years after 9/11, and he today is the senior vice president of sales for about a $20 billion global manufacturing firm. And so he and I were just kind of talking, comparing notes, and you know, looking at what do we think the time frame is going to be when things will start to, you know, come back to some semblance of normalness. And it was interesting as we were talking, you know, he said something and I thought it was pretty profound. He goes, the good thing about being a little bit older is that you come through these types of things before, and you've been in the time where you had to rebuild before. And he said, so you gain a level of confidence that no matter what is thrown at you, you can still bounce back and rebuild from it. It might suck. It might take longer than you want it to. It's not necessarily going to be easy, but at least you know, in your heart that, you know, that you can stand up again, and that you can move forward again, and you can rebuild. And I think that's such a great thing for us as leaders to, you know, to just remind ourselves that, yeah, we are in a new world, but, you know, the reality is we did it once. We figured out how to succeed once, and we'll figure out how to succeed in this too. It's just, we just got to have faith in that fact.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there's people have faith that eventually, you know, we're going to come out the other side of this. It is something that, you know, certainly I haven't seen in my lifetime or at this scale and really, you know, recent memory. But I think that's a great point. Like, the silver lining with all of this is, you know, after all the dust settles with this and, you know, we've come out the other side and we figured out how to adjust and adapt and survive, you know, you can look back at that as kind of a peg in the wall of, you know, whenever anything ever gets tough after this, it's, hey, if we got through, you know, the coronavirus crisis, we get through pretty much anything.
Yeah. I was writing something the other day and I was looking for a quote, to use in it. And I came upon a website where there were some quotes, or phrases, affirmations, if you will, that they, you know, they use in the, you know, in the Navy SEALs. And there was one that actually has popped to mind. I thought it was a great one. He said, you know, you've got three options. You can give up, you can give in, or you can stand up and fight. And, you know, and that's really for all of us right now. You know, do we want to give up? You know, and if so, what's that going to get us? Do we want to give in and just say, it is what it is, and we're probably all going to get sick and die? Or do we want to, you know, stand up and fight? And those are really the only three options that we have.
Yeah, absolutely. So assuming that we pick the third option of, you know, we're going to stand up and fight, what are, you know, for the leaders that make those decisions at this point in time, what are the, you know, kind of, what's the rule book they should be following? What are the best practices they should be following to be able to navigate and lead not only themselves, but lead, you know, their teams or their companies through kind of chaotic times?
Yeah. Well, there's a great quote that I found years ago from Charles Swindoll, and he said, you know, life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you choose to respond to it. And So I think for us as leaders, that's really what it comes down to, you know, is how are we choosing to respond in these times? And the most of us, I know there's a great story, and I think you're going to interview Joe in a later podcast, but I remember in the early phases of Too Logical, I'm stealing one of his stories. He may use this. I don't know. as long as I get in before him, I can hijack the story.
Exactly. You got first.
There you go.
Right.
the privilege of taking one of the early time slots.
Exactly.
But, you know, Joe was, he relayed this story to me after the fact, but he was down on Long Island. And he was, if I remember right, and I'm paraphrasing, so I might have some of my facts slightly off, but, I'll take the creative liberty. He was down on Long Island, and he was sitting with a guy who ran a large mortgage company. And this guy, he's there, and he's with, like, the, I guess it was, like, the president, maybe the VP of sales or something like that. And you know, the president said, well, hey, you know, I appreciate you coming in and, chatting with us. But he goes, I don't know if you know, but he goes, our business, he goes, it's highly dependent upon, you know, interest rates. And, right now the rates have been going up. And when rates go up, you know, what happens is people don't really buy homes. They don't refinance their mortgages. He goes, so he said, unless, you know, you have the ability to, you know, get the Fed to lower the interest rates, he goes, I don't really think there's going to be much that, you know, you're going to be able to do to help us. And, you know, so Joey kind of laughs at that. And he said, well, he goes, I don't have any control over interest rates. He said, but, you know, if you'll indulge me, he goes, can I just, you know, ask you a couple of questions? So the guy kind of looks at him and he's like, well, all right. Then he goes, you know, would you agree with the, you know, the statement that, you know, even in the best of times when rates are low and, you know, the people are buying houses and refinancing houses, he goes, even in the best of times with interest rates, you know, would it be fair to say that there's somebody there in the business who's having their worst month ever? And the guy's like, well, he goes, yeah, I suppose that's possible. And he said, okay. He goes, well, what about on the other side of things when, you know, when rates are higher and, you know, we're in a time like we are right now? He goes, might there also be somebody who's having their best month ever? And the guy's like, well, yeah, probably that could happen too. And so Joe said, well, maybe the degree to which somebody is succeeding or failing has less to do with those external factors and more to do with the way that, you know, they're approaching those things. He said, you know, the challenge is, he goes, when rates are low, he goes, selling is relatively easy. He goes, because, you know, there are people actively out there in the market looking to, you know, looking for mortgages. He goes, and we've been in that situation for a long time. So a lot of people, they've figured out what is the plan to succeed in a really good market. He said, but we're not in a good market right now. He goes, and people got to realize it's a different plan. You can still succeed, but you got to understand that it's a different plan. And if you keep trying to use the same plan that we're always using when rates were low, it's not going to work for you. So he looks at that guy and he said, so, you know, he goes, what we can do is we can help you and help your people to figure out the plan to succeed in a tough market. And the president, you know, he kind of leans back in his chair and he's like, all right, well, he goes, you know, tell me more. And I think that's the same thing for all of us right now, is that we all have been in a position where, you know, we know what the plan was in the world as it was, you know, prior to, you know, March 1st, but we're in a new world right now. And, you know, each of us, we've got to learn that new plan. You know,
yeah,
I think that's
so true, especially, yeah. You know, now everything, you have to adjust so quickly. That's so much more accelerated now, is what was working for you even last month is not going to work for you this month.
Right.
And to be able to adjust and figure out, you know, you have to adjust that plan. It's And if you can figure out how to adjust that plan, there is opportunity. But I think that's so true. To try to execute the same plan you were executing a month or 2 months ago is just not flat out not going to work right now.
No, exactly. One of the things, we've talked about it a lot in other podcasts, and certainly anybody who's been through any of our training, is familiar with, but, we have always, as we interact with groups, we always go back to that, that the model of how, it's a person's dominant thoughts and beliefs that drives their actions, and it's their actions by the laws of cause and effect that drive their results. And, and then as we, are working with managers and leaders, we help them to understand really the level at which they interact with their people. And, managers are typically the ones who are, they're focused more at the action level. They're, it's more about tactics and strategies and, getting people to execute upon plans and, and things along those lines. Whereas leaders, they're, much more focused on the thoughts and the beliefs of people, So they're the ones who are establishing the vision that, of what the, on the macro level, what the team is really trying to accomplish. They're the ones who are, driving the buy-in to the, to that management plan. They're the ones that are, shaping that culture and, engaging people and giving them, giving them hope. And, so, going back to that model, it's a great framework for us, as we're, you and I, Sean, are kind of diving in to really begin to think about how do we need to change that plan that we're following, given the world that we're in right now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, to your point, I think so much of that starts with, fundamentally recognizing that the plan has to change.
Yeah.
I think it's really easy for, for people to just default to what they've always done. And, as a result, they end up getting frustrated and bang their head against the wall. And now is certainly the time with everything going on and everything that's changed to really step back and reevaluate and look at, all right, what do we need to change? What do we need to adjust?
Yeah. Well, we joked around before about the, the joys of the turbulent times that I've been through. What I found when you really step back and you look at it, there's probably three or four real fundamental rules for, kind of navigating through, turbulent times or tumultuous times or chaos or, any of the things that are, thrown at us, disruptors that are thrown at us, in the business realm. The first of those well, even going back to that model, the first of those is that in turbulent times or times of chaos or times of where there's a lot of disruption, one of the key things or one of the rules is that we have to manage less and lead more. And, it's somewhat counterintuitive almost. What I've seen is that, when most people have a default style, of how they interact with other individuals. And candidly, I've probably been in front of 30, 40, 50,000, managers and leaders through the course of my career. And, what I've found is that most people's default style is more management based for a multitude of reasons. But, when push comes to shove, their default is to go back into their, into the management side of things. So when the pressure's on, they get more tactical. They get more rooted in their plans. They tend to be more on top of the actions that people are taking, and, they manage more when the pressure's on. In reality, though, what people need is, you know, in turbulent times, is they need more leadership than really management. They need, you know, somebody who's there, you know, paying attention to keeping their headset in the right place, giving them that sense of hope that, you know, the fact that, you know, we're going to be able to come through this and we're going to be all right in doing it.
Yeah, I think, you know, particularly right now, people are, the mentality is such a huge part of what's going on, you know, and people, there's so much uncertainty, you know, in their careers or in the business world. And even on a personal level, there's so much uncertainty and fear with their own personal health or the health of the, you know, the people that they love. They're worried about their family. They're worried about their friends. And so much of that can bleed over into, you know, what they're doing on a day-to-day basis from a work perspective. And so I wholeheartedly agree that, you know, that leadership of making somebody feel a little bit safer right now and cultivating, you know, that kind of faith that things will work out is great. And kind of like you mentioned before, you know, to default to the management right now, if you default to management of, you know, really getting tactical on the plan that you were executing 2 months ago, that's not going to work. Yeah. And I think so much of what, you know, great leaders in that role realize is I don't have to have all of the answers. And, you know, so if you can default more towards the leadership side of things, the new plan will probably form and a better plan will probably form than if you just tried to make it up on your own.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you said something a moment ago, Sean, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, there's six universal emotions that we have as, you know, as human beings. And the oldest and most dominant emotion that we have is fear. And, you know, and once that emotion is triggered, it will shove all logic right out the window. And you said it, you know, people are, they're scared in terms of their own health and the health of their family, you know? So if that's a major focus of somebody, their head isn't on, you know, being engaged in a tactical plan of a business, you know, they're in survival mode. You know, they're scared about what is this, you know, what's the status of my job and my finances? And, you know, they're scared and uncertain in terms of, well, how long is this, you know, how long is this really going to last? And so as leaders, I think it's critical for us to recognize that, you know, people are feeling this way, acknowledge it. We're feeling this way, for Christ's sake,
yeah.
You know? So,
absolutely.
You know, I mean, I'm sitting there looking at my 80-year-old parents and I want to make sure they come out of the other side of this. So, you know, those things weigh heavy in people's mind.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, so there's a great quote, from a gentleman. He's a Vietnamese monk, I may be butchering his name. I'm not sure. I think it's Thich Nhat Hanh is his name. And I remember I used this quote in a keynote with NEC here when they were going through some, you know, some challenging times, you know, a number of years back. I think it's a great one for where we are right now, you know, and because he said hope is important, because it can make the present moment less difficult to bear. If we believe that tomorrow will be better, we can bear the hardships of today.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that for each of us as leaders to really focus on what we're really, at the end of the day, we're giving our people hope. That, you know, hey, yeah, it's going to be okay. We will come through this. You will be fine. We just do the right things right now. You know, we greatly increase in the odds that, you know, that at the bare minimum, we all, you know, we're all going to be around, and then we can figure out what we're going to do with things.
Yeah. No, I think that's that's so true and fits right into, you know, focusing more on that leadership, because people need hope. They need hope right now. And without it, you know, that fear will rule. And no matter how much you want to get tactical, you know, when somebody's afraid and worrying about themselves and the people that they love, you're not going to get the best work out of them.
Yeah. You know, we, in the classes, we talk about leadership moments. And, you know, for anybody who's listening who, you know, hasn't been through, you know, one of our classes, and, you know, what we talk about is that in every conversation with anybody, it doesn't matter if it's with our spouse or with children or, you know, with one of the people on our team, but in every conversation, we will always be presented with at least one leadership moment. And the leadership moments are that moment in a conversation where we can influence what somebody is thinking. We can influence somebody's beliefs. We can, you know, give them that sense of hope. We can, you know, build them up, or we can reassure them. We can, you know, we can, you know, just help them, you know, to gain a little clarity or a little, you know, with regard to the, you know, what is the vision moving forward. So every day we're given them, and I think right now more than ever, we have to look for those things and really be mindful of the fact that the, you know, the most important things that we're doing right now is how are we positively influencing the mindsets of all of those people on our teams. And if we ignore that fact, we ignore it at our own peril, because, you know, we're not going to get anything else done until we can make sure people's headsets are in the right place right now.
Yeah, no, I think that's so true. If there was ever a time, and I think it's always the time, but particularly now, that focus on making sure everybody's mind is in the right spot is more important than it's really ever been.
Yeah. So that would be my first rule for, you know, kind of leading in turbulent times is, you know, manage less, lead more.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I like that. So, all right. So manage less, lead more. I think that makes a ton of sense. And particularly, you know, we're recognizing that we need to instill hope, cultivate hope in people and make sure that their mind is in the right spot. So on top of manage less, lead more, what else should people be, leaders be focused on?
The second thing I think I would point people towards is just to really, really understand the concept, understand and leverage, I guess, the concept of emotional transferability. And, you know, that may be something that people we're all familiar with, but maybe you've never really thought about before. But, you know, human emotions transfer from one individual to another. The first form of human communication, long before we had ever come up with language, was through emotions. So we're actually more adept at understanding emotions than we are at understanding language. Which is, you know, that's, you know, candidly, that's the whole reason why people get sideways about emails and things like that, is because they infer emotion into, you know, oftentimes in an incorrect way. But we're really good when we're connected with people at reading emotion. And, you know, if you ever doubt of that, I mean, think about, well, I mean, if you've ever been, you know, if you've ever walked into a room where there's a couple in the midst of like a heated argument or something like that, and they, you know, the saying goes that, you know, you could cut the tension with a knife, and you physically can feel the tension, you know, in that room. You're feeling that emotion of the room. Or if you've been on an airplane and there's a screaming child that is, you know, two rows behind you, and whether you're a parent or not, you start feeling antsy because of that. Because that emotion is transferring from that child to you. So, you know, dominant emotions transfer very, very readily from one individual to another. And so if you think about, even going back to what we talked about before, about, you know, the fear and the apprehension and the uncertainty and all of those emotions that people are feeling right now, those things can literally, like a pinball, just, you know, bounce back and forth across the, you know, a team or a group of people. And so, you know, as leaders, I think what we have to do is we have to make sure that we're establishing the dominant emotion across our team, rather than just inheriting the, you know, the dominant negative one that you know may be reverberating around.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that's one thing that people underestimate is just how much of communication is nonverbal. And, you know, I think I know that was even true for myself. One of the things that I noticed and took away from, you know, a few years ago, I think you probably remember, I went down to Nicaragua with my brother to help him set up a hammock business. And I went down and neither of us spoke a lick of Spanish. But
that could be a problem.
Yeah, exactly. But we're like, yeah, we'll figure it out on the way. Which is probably naive, but you know, it is what it is. It's what entrepreneurs do. That was one thing that I walked away from was, while we were down there, you know, neither of us spoke Spanish. And, you know, first of all, when you're surrounded by it, you start to pick up little tidbits here and there. But even just interacting with people down there, it was amazing how much of the conversation was nonverbal. We weren't speaking the same language. Yeah, I was speaking English, they're speaking Spanish. Neither of us could, you know, really understand the words that we were saying. And yet somehow we kind of figured out what was going on. We kind of figured out, you know, what we were trying to get to. And, you know, you're able to figure out, is this, you know, a friendly conversation, or do they want to talk to me? Do they not want to talk to me? Are they annoyed with me, or are they, you know, really trying to be helpful? And the good thing was most of them were trying to be helpful, but, so much of that was a big takeaway for me, was so much of that communication was, we weren't even speaking the same language, and yet we were communicating. And I think that's incredibly true all the time, but particularly now, is, you know, for the default with everything going on and the chaos and, you know, the constant news, you know, most of which is negative all the time. And especially right now, if we're not careful, our default emotion that we'll be carrying around with and injecting into all the conversations we have is going to be negative. And that could be really problematic.
Yeah. I remember, this is probably 15 years ago or so. Michelle and I, we were grocery shopping at Wegmans, one morning, and, you know, and typically Michelle, you know, she, you know, does more of the grocery shopping than I am. So she's more aware of things. And for anybody who's listening, who's not aware of a Wegmans is, it's a grocery store chain that was started here in Rochester, and they're pretty world renowned for their groceries. I mean, it's, you walk into a Wegmans store and their fresh produce section is about the size of your average grocery store, you know? So, I mean, they have, you know, they don't just have everything. They have 20 of everything, you know? So it's pretty amazing. So Sean, anyhow, we're grocery shopping. And, so we walked in and grabbed the cart, and Michelle said to me, she goes, you know, we need some luncheon meat for lunches this week. She goes, you know, go over to the deli and get us 3/4 pound of turkey. So I, you know, I walk over and I, you know, take my number from the ticket thing, and I'm standing there, and the lady behind the counter, she calls off, she goes, 57. Right. And I, you know, and I look at my ticket, you know, and I go, oh, I get 57, you know? And so she looks at me, she goes, well, what do you want? Right. And I was like, geez, you know? And I said, well, I said, I need 3/4 pound of turkey. And so she goes, well, what kind of turkey? And she points down into the case, you know, and there's like 70 different types of turkey, you know? And I'm like, I'm like, holy crap, I got a freaking idea, you know? And So I just, I'm like, well, you know, give me that one. And I point to one of them, you know, so she pulls the turkey out of the case and she slaps it up onto the slicer, you know, and she goes, how do you want it cut? Right. And I'm like, holy crap, all these decisions. I don't know, you know,
and I really underestimated what goes.
Yeah. It was, I mean, this is way more involved than I anticipated, you know, you know, and so she's, you know, and you know, she goes, how do you want to cut, you know, and you know, at that point I realized, here's a lady who obviously is having a bad day, you know, and I'm thinking about actually what we're talking about right now about emotional transferability, you know, and so here's a lady with a very dominant negative emotion. And if I don't break the cycle, what's going to happen is, you know, that I'm going to end up absorbing her negative emotion and I'm going to start feeling tense and apprehensive because of it. So, you know, she's, how do you want to cut? You know, so I look at her and I smiled and I said, however you feel like cutting it today, you know, and she kind of does this double take, you know, and she's looking at me like, what's that? You know? And she goes, well, how about one big slice? Right. And, so I go, if that's the way you want to cut it, I go, that's good with me, you know? And so she shakes her head, you know, and she starts, you know, she's cutting the turkey, you know, and so she cuts it and she puts it into the bag and she slaps the bag up on the counter. And, you know, at this point, Michelle had walked over and she's kind of watching the exchange. And so I took the bag and I go, thank you very much. I go, you have a fantastic day, you know? And I put it into the cart and Michelle and I are walking away and she looks at me and she says, what the hell is that all about? She goes, you're not going to brighten that lady's day. And I said, I'm not trying to brighten her day. I said, I'm just trying to make sure she doesn't ruin mine. Yeah. And, you know, so I think as, you know, as leaders, right now, we have to be mindful of what you said a moment ago. You know, there's a lot of negative emotions going around right now. And if we're not careful, you know, we can very easily inherit those emotions and then we start feeling more negative because of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you almost kind of have to have that emotional defense up right now more than ever.
Yeah. Just being mindful of, you know, of that. I mean, you know, if you think about it, you know, as leaders, you know, every day regardless of what department we lead, or even if just we lead ourselves, you know, we always sell something, you know, we're selling a goal, we're selling a plan, we're selling an idea, we're selling people on doing things, you know, differently than they've done them in the past, you know, we're always selling something. But you know, right now, I think, you know, we have to make sure that, you know, what we're really selling is we're selling that, you know, that kind of calm, confident faith that, you know, we're all going to get through this and as we get through it, we're going to be better, we're going to be stronger, and we're going to be smarter because of it. And, you know, not get sucked into the well of negativity that is all around us right now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's so important. And, you know, I think even ties into, you know, talking about what we were talking about before in terms of, you know, managing less and leading more. When people are, you know, have that negative emotion. And, you know, I know it's true for me. I think it's true for everybody. And so as a leader, being really mindful of, you know, am I allowing the negative emotions to come in and kind of, you know, be my guiding light right now? You know, you're not going to put out your best work. You're not going to, and you're certainly not going to, you know, lead people in a way that they need to be led right now. You're just going to be pouring gas on the fire.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
So manage less and lead more. Emotional
leverage, emotional transferability. Yep.
Yeah.
I would say, I think the third thing to really be mindful of is that right now, you know, we talk a lot about vision when we're working with leaders, you know, and and vision sometimes gets a bad rap because it's the poster on a wall or, you know, just kind of the corporate fluff stuff that you know, organizations do, but they don't really, you know, they don't really do a good job in anchoring, reinforcing, or helping people to feel connected to. But, you know, in reality, its vision is just giving people a, you know, more clarity in terms of the, you know, the direction and the purpose behind, you know, why we're doing what we're doing. It's the relevancy for the goals and the plans and all of those types of things. And I think if I had to come up with a third rule, I'd say that, you know, especially right now, if we as leaders don't sell the vision, then the vision is going to be negative. You know, it's going to be, it's going to be tied to, you know, people's fears that, you know, the business isn't going to make it, that they're not going to lose their job, that, you know, that they're going to be overcome with, you know, the illness or whatever, you know, the most pressing problem is. I was reading something not long ago. It was kind of a cool story, actually, about a gentleman. His name is George Washington Carver, and I'd never heard of him before. But really, an incredible story. So he was a slave, basically, back in the, you know, the middle part of the 1800s. The slave owner, I guess you would say, had his wife had decided to teach this, you know, this young boy, George Washington Carver, in order to read, you know. So she teaches this young boy to read and inspires kind of a little bit, you know, within this guy. Well, anyhow, after Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves, George Washington Carver went on, and because he could read, he went on to pursue an education. And so he gets a high school education. He goes on to college, actually became the first, if I remember right, he was the first freed slave to earn a master's degree. And, but the coolest part of his story was the fact that, you know, it didn't end there with an education. He actually became one of the most prominent scientists back in the latter part of the 1800s and early part of the 1900s. In fact, he literally changed the way that we approached agriculture. He was a consultant to presidents back in those days. He was Time magazine actually called him the Leonardo da Vinci of his day. Just an incredible, incredible success story from a horrific beginning. There was a quote in the story that I was reading that, you know, without vision, there is no hope. I think is the quote that he said. So without vision, there is no hope. And, you know, and it's, you actually, you and I were talking about this is a couple of months back. You remember the book Influence? Is it Cialdini?
Yeah, Robert Cialdini.
Yeah. And he talked, it was cool in that book. One of the things he talked about was he talked about vision in the book, and he said, I'm trying to remember how he phrased it. You know, basically, if I remember the way he said it right, he said that people will stay in a bad place if they don't have a vision of a better place.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah. So it's, you know, and if you think about it, you know, you look at oppressive regimes, right? You look at like North Korea and, you know, places in the Middle East and you look at oppressive regimes, and one of the things they always do is they limit the access to information. They limit internet access. They limit, you know, the access to books and education and all of those types of things to people. And, you know, they try to keep people ignorant because, you know, that way people don't ever set a better vision for their life. So you can control people a lot more if you limit their vision.
Yeah, right. They don't know what's possible. All they know is what they've seen, what they've experienced, and they think that's it. And that's so much of, you know, the North Korea and those oppressive regimes is just censoring and not giving people any hope of anything better or different.
Right. And by doing that, the people don't rise up and overthrow the government.
Right.
So I think, you know, for us as leaders right now, it's, you know, selling that vision is important. However, I think what we also have to do is we have to shorten it up. We can't, you know, it's not, you know, the what are we going to achieve over the next 5 years or 3 years or any. I think, you know, that we got to make our vision shorter term and, you know, pull it a little closer to home so that people can see, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel more clearly now than in the past. And just, you know, keep, you know, selling people on the fact that we'll get through this. We'll be better. We'll be smarter. We'll be stronger for it. And, you know, and we'll be able to, you know, just as we've succeeded in the past, we'll succeed in the future. And I think, you know, we have to keep selling people. You know, it's funny, as I'm sitting here thinking about these three things that we've talked about, you really can see how interrelated they all are.
Yeah, no, for sure. They're incredibly connected. And I think, you know, to your point, seeing that light at the end of the tunnel is so important right now. You know, even just turning on the news, I've even heard that analogy with people and news anchors saying, you know, where is the light at the end of the tunnel? And so for whether it doesn't even necessarily have to be the light at the end of the tunnel for all of, you know, what's going on right now in the world and the coronavirus, although I think that would be great. But from a leadership perspective in terms of, you know, leading a team, to give them the light at the end of the tunnel in terms of, you know, even just bite-sized things that, you know, we can get to a better place from here to there. And then, you know, once we're there, we can go from there to the next spot. But you need to give people that light at the end of the tunnel to keep them churning. Cause if all they see is darkness, that the fire in their belly goes out pretty quick.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess that would be the third rule is very much, you know, make sure that, you know, that we're selling a vision, but it's just a shorter term vision than what we may have sold, you know, 3 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. So you said three or four. We got manage less and lead more, emotional transferability and leveraging that and selling the vision. Is there anything else that would be top of mind for people, for leaders should have top of mind right now?
You know, I think if I were to put a fourth one in there, I think it's a Puritan proverb, something back from the, it was an outgrowth of the, you know, the early, you know, settlers in this country. I may be wrong, but that's where I thought the root was from. But there's a quote that, what is it? Idle minds are the devil's workshop, or there's something to that. I'm paraphrasing that. I may be messing it up, but I think that's important for us to recognize right now. I mean, for a lot of us, you know, we're working virtually. We're, you know, the you know, business is slower than what it, you know, normally is. You know, the pace is very different than what it was. I mean, you and I were talking, you know, before we got started, just about, you know, how it's easier to focus because, you know, you in some sense, because you just don't have all the distractions of the office. But there's a lot of opportunity now, maybe more so than ever, to have an idle mind. And, yeah, you know, if there's an idle mind's being the devil's workshop, you know, there's more room for negativity to creep up, for negative thoughts and fears and apprehensions and all of those kind of things, that's kind of creep into people's mindset. So I guess if I had to come up with a fourth rule, I'd say that I think that focus is a great distraction from the turbulence. If we look at these times and, you know, how often do we complain that, we will start a project and we stop at 90% because we don't have time to get that final 10% done, really done the right way. Or maybe there's something that we wanted to do, you know, but we just didn't have time to get to. And, you know, so now is a wonderful time to really sit back and think about what are all those things that we really wished we could have gotten done, prior to the, you know, of March of this year. But we didn't have a chance to focus on them. And maybe now is the time to start thinking about focusing on those things. Because if we can keep ourselves busy, it crowds out the space for people to get swept away in the negativity.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely true. And I think looking at the in things like this, there's always silver linings and opportunities. And I think for this one, that's certainly one of them, is all of a sudden now, you know, people and teams have the time and have the bandwidth to do the things that they didn't have that time or bandwidth to do before, to focus on new projects or innovative ideas or, you know, whatever that may be that had been backburnered because it's not necessarily in the day-to-day or it's a little bit more forward thinking, or, you know, it's just hard to break out of, especially when things are going well, people are just, keeping the machine running. And now I think with the extra time and, you know, quiet space, it's a great time to tackle those projects that, you know, you've always wanted to, whether I think as a team or even as an individual, to tackle those things that you've always wanted to tackle, but really haven't had the time to do. Now you got the time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I guess those would be my four rules. Manage less, lead more. Understand emotional transferability. Don't fall victim to it, but rather kind of establish the dominant emotion. Make sure that we recognize that if we're not consciously selling the vision, then the vision is going to tend to turn negative. So, you know, sell a vision, a shorter term vision of, you know, that's more rooted in hope, and, you know, keep people busy, you know, keep people focused on something, because if they're just sitting around, then, you know, they're more likely to get swept up in the negativity.
Yeah, no, I think very, very true. All right. So as we're kind of wrapping up, I wanted to just touch on one last thing, which was, you know, one of the big changes now, with everything going on, is all of a sudden, you know, teams that were always working in an office together are all of a sudden virtual and remote. In that context, is there anything that, you know, leaders should be mindful of when it comes to managing and leading a team virtually?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. The last year, we rolled out a pretty comprehensive leadership initiative for Lincoln Financial. And, they were sort of in the early phases of, creating more virtual opportunities for, people in the organization. And so it was interesting being with them as they were going through, this transition. And they actually asked us to, to build a module into the leadership training, about leading virtual employees. And so, it was actually a very cool discussion about what managers learned from, leading, virtual employees and things, and what were the, the challenges and things that they encountered. One of the things that was, and it was interesting, you'd heard this, you kind of heard it on both sides, both on the employee side and on the manager side. There's that, that old, saying that, out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, so the managers talked about the fact that, because somebody wasn't sitting, two offices down or two cubicles down or something like that, they weren't really mindful of, of that person unless they needed something from them. I remember one of the ladies down in Atlanta, she shared a story. She said, I would come in the morning and I'd walk around and I'd say, good morning to all the folks that were on my team. And, we'd chat a little bit about, whatever, was going on in their world or what they were working on or those kinds of things. And she said, it kind of dawned on me one day that I don't do that with my virtual employees. And she said, and I realized that was kind of a mistake. So she said, I started, reaching out to my virtual people, in the mornings, just, hey, good morning, something like that. And she goes, it was funny in the beginning, people would respond that they instant message me back and saying, what do you need? and she goes, and I realized, what in essence happened is they'd become conditioned to see that the only time I reached out to them was when I needed something from them.
Yeah.
And, so I think when we've got virtual people, we've got to think about it more from a relationship standpoint, the way we think about the people that are, in the office or the cubicle right next to us. And be more proactive in the communication side of things so that there is that connection, because it's, you and I were talking about it. It's kind of lonely when you're working virtual, you miss that camaraderie of having people around.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think that's so true. And I think that's such a great point about, that being aware of how, people will respond and I think that's such great self-awareness for that, the leader that you mentioned for her to recognize that I've kind of conditioned my people to expect that whenever they hear from me, it's because I need something. That's a really high level of awareness, but I think so important to understand, particularly in these times, and in terms of, having that rapport and that culture that can be hard to do when teams are virtual.
Yeah. Well, in along those, I think as an extension of that too, if you think about typically how you interact with somebody in the office, is, you don't just, in many cases walk into their space and, drop right into business mode. There's a lot of times there's a little bit more of the casual conversation that happens, and then you kind of get to the business stuff.
Right.
And I think we have to be mindful of that too with virtual folks. Don't just drop into the business, but, take some time to, build rapport with them and find out what's going on, how their day's going, or, what's going on in their life right now, and those kinds of things, rather than just straight to the business kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that also creates more of a human connection.
Yeah. And I think that's, I think that's so important right now and ties back to a lot of things that, you know, we were talking about before. And in terms of, you know, people have a lot going on right now, even outside of the business world. You know, like we said, people are worried about their families and their friends and things like that. And, you know, I think as leaders, that's a, you know, an opportunity to bond on another level that maybe you hadn't touched before.
Yeah. Hey, Sean, let me ask you a question. I mean, you and I we're in different generations. What's your perspective of like FaceTime and video and, you know, and those kinds of things?
You know, I've, you know, gotten into it more recently, and even, you know, just through this, you know, with everything going on, even just on a personal, level, I've noticed myself leaning more and a lot of my friends leaning more towards video, you know, doing FaceTime and Zoom and things like that. And I think, you know, it kind of goes back to that so much of communication is nonverbal that I think, you know, just seeing the face and facial expressions and body language and hand gestures and all those kinds of things. It's another level of connection that I think any time is helpful, and it's something I'm definitely paying more attention to. But I think even, you know, particularly right now, I think it can be an incredibly helpful tool to really, you know, stay connected with people because so much of that communication is nonverbal. And the great thing with video too is, you know, you can do it, at the same time. You can be having a real-time conversation, but I think maybe even another underutilized part of video is just doing it asynchronously, you know, just recording a 2-minute message to somebody and sending it to them. And then when they have time, sending, you know, something back. You know, particularly now, I think, you know, there's a lot going on in people's lives. And so even, you know, if you can't make the time or figure out the time to do it live, I think there's a lot of value in using video to, you know, record a 2-minute video and send it to somebody.
That's a cool idea.
It's so easy. And I think that it's another layer of, you know, even leaving somebody a voicemail or sending them an email. It just is another level of human connection.
Because that was one of the things I remember we talked about, you know, last year in that class was, you know, using the, you know, kind of the webcam, conferencing video, you know, type stuff, more in interactions. And I remember there were some people were very comfortable with, you know, with that, and other people were like highly self-conscious of it. And my instinct very much aligns with yours. I think that the communication when you can see somebody is entirely different than just, you know, than audio only. You know, it's, you know, so much more you pick up, and, you know, I think the impact of it is so much greater. But that was one of the things we talked a lot about in our, you know, group conversations around it, was getting people to be comfortable with, you know, being on video. And I remember one of the ladies in the group, it was kind of a funny story. She goes, you know, I was getting a lot of resistance from my team, to, you know, using the video conferencing. And, you know, she goes, because, you know, people were self-conscious. They hadn't taken a shower yet that morning, or they were sitting in their pajamas, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, she said, so, you know, she said in one of, you know, one of our video conferences, she goes, I looked a mess. She goes, I put makeup on half my face. She goes, I teased up my hair on, you know, on one side, so it was sticking up. And, you know, and she goes, and then we all get on the call, and she goes, and everybody just burst out laughing, you know? And, you know, and she said, I don't care if you look like this. She goes, it doesn't make any difference to me. She goes, yeah. I just want us to be able to see one another. And she goes, because then we can connect on a better level. And, yeah. You know, I loved that story because she took that objection that people had in their minds and she made a joke out of it. She made it fun. And, you know, at that point in time, she put everybody more at ease. And, yeah. You know, and I thought that was just brilliant what she did.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely brilliant. I think, you know, such an important part of it is, you know, in terms of integrating that into, you know, how you're communicating with your team is, and I think this is true of communication, whether it's with your team or whether it's with customers or in marketing or whatever it is, you know, create just a culture of authenticity. You know, I think the hesitation a lot of people have is they feel like as soon as video gets involved or something like that, it has to be polished and it has to be perfect. And, mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a lot of overlooking of, you know, just the opportunity to use that technology to be able to connect better. And so much of that connection is just be authentic, you know.
Yeah.
Make it okay to sit there in your pajamas. That's not what it's about. It's not about, you know, the dress code on the
right.
You know, on the Zoom call. It's about, you know, seeing each other and connecting. And so I think that was brilliant what she did. I think the more that you can just make that an authentic channel for people to communicate of, you know, hey, here's me. You know, I'm still in my pajamas today, or I haven't taken a shower yet today, or whatever it is, like, that's okay. It's not about that. It's about, you know, connecting with people.
Yeah. There was, you know, there's something else that I remember, one of the other leaders in the group did, which I thought was cool. That just popped in my head. She said, you know, she goes, you know, when you're working virtually, she goes, a lot of times you're cooped up in your, you know, your home office, wherever you work, you know, at home all day long and, you know, sitting behind a computer screen and stuff. And she said, what I would do is, she goes, I would FaceTime with people on my team. And she said, she goes, hey, let's take a walk together. And she goes, we take virtual walks. And she goes, so I would get me out of my office, get them out of, you know, wherever they were working. You know, we get some fresh air, we get some exercise, a little change of scenery. And she goes, what I found was it totally changed the dynamics of the conversations I was having too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's brilliant. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the walking meeting. You know, Steve mm-hmm. Jobs used to be a huge proponent of the walking meeting. And I'd never really thought of doing it, you know, virtually over a FaceTime or something, but I think that's brilliant. You know, make it more casual.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, you know, it's how do we take the things that we know work and, you know, when you've got people in an office and how do you make them more virtual? You know, I remember them talking about, you know, they would do virtual lunches and, or my sister-in-law's, her company, a couple weeks ago did a virtual happy hour and, you know, and just finding ways to, you know, make people feel connected, even though they're not physically connected. And I think those, you know, doing that when you're working with virtual teams, I think is really a critical importance.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's, you know, you can strip away a lot of the preconceived notions you have about what, you know, video has to be in terms of it being polished. And, you know, just think of it as the pipes, that, you know, to the communication pipes to be able to connect with people in the same way that you would physically. And I think the more you can get creative with that, the better off you're going to be in terms of really building some connection with and camaraderie around your team that's maybe distributed.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, that would be some of my thoughts in terms of the virtual teams anyway.
All right. I like it. I like it. All right, Dave. Well, I appreciate you taking the time. Any final thoughts or anything before we sign off?
You know, I just think that it's, you know, now more than ever, which I think as leaders, we have to remind ourselves that, you know, as human beings, we're all feeling the same things right now. I mean, we're all unsettled. We're all, you know, uneasy. We're all uncertain. We're all in this, you know, chaos together. And we gain strength by pulling together in times, even when we have to be socially distant. And, you know, and so I think acknowledging that fact, speaking to it, and, you know, you said before, just being real in these times, you know, gives us all strength to be able to, you know, even though we're not physically together, to be able emotionally to move through these times and get ourselves to a better place.
Yeah, so very true. All right, Dave, thanks for chatting.
You are very welcome, my friend. Hopefully I'll see you.
All right. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Sean, have a great day, man.
All right. Yeah, you too.
See you, buddy. Yep. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the award-winning team at Too Logical, the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence and one of 2020's top 20 leadership training companies in the world, as recognized by Training Industry. As a result of the challenges popping up from COVID-19, Too Logical is doing something unique for a limited time. With podcasts more popular than ever and a suddenly remote workforce, having your own internal podcast might be one of the best things you can do for your people and your organization right now. We're offering to produce a free internal podcast for you, no strings attached. This will be a private podcast available exclusively to your employees, co-branded with your company, produced by our top trainers, and completely customized to your organization. We can only do this for 5 organizations, and once the slots are filled, they're filled. So if you're interested, get your name in early and fill out an application at toological.com.